This is Asian with Oddball Pilot. I'm up in Nome, Alaska right now, and there have been a series of accidents in Alaska over the last year that it struck me as a little bit different and just started making me think about the culture of flying in Alaska and how it's changed since I came up here in 1995, and what companies make from pilots. And to sort of get this conversation off the going, I had a series of talks with a lot of pilots I used to fly with up here who have been up here for a lot of years. And we thought we'd share this conversation. We thought it might be interesting for people to hear. So joining me is Brian Weckworth. He's in Fairbanks. And I flew with him at St. Mary's with my second job up here. And he continued on and flew for a few different airlines up here. And Singer's here as well, who's heard me talk about issues up here since I came up. And Alex Haynes, who's a friend of mine who does ferry flying. So I think our discussion, Brian, just really is, what did we feel like the culture was when we first got up here? What did we feel like was expected of us? And what were our expectations of Alaska maybe when we showed up? Any thoughts on that, Brian?
Yeah. I think when we first started here, it was a go-get-em attitude. It was also prior to the major introduction of GPS. So getting in and around was, a lot of it was piloted. There was even a little bit of, pardon the term, but it's one that's widely used, dead reckoning. And it was, like I say, the go-get-em attitude. There was a lot more operators. There was a lot more competition. So there was a lot more having to get out there and getting the job done. And also back then, there wasn't the number of nav aids. There's more approaches. There's more technology out there that's helped make things better. And so you were kind of on your own. As soon as you left within the service volume of a nav aid, like say, for instance, out of Bethel where I started first, on a bad day, low weather, you were outside of the VOR at Bethel within 15 miles because it was useless, the altitudes that we had to fly at. And you had to just get out there and get it done. We were using Loran, and Loran was quite useful back then. It was the technology of the time. But there was also the, not necessarily in some cases, the push from the operators, but there was the can-do attitude of a lot of people out there, and that's kind of where it hasn't gone. It's kind of changed quite a bit now. From what I've seen, that there is a sense from the operator, the owners, and stuff of not having to go that far anymore. At least that's what I've seen.
Right, and I would agree, and I would say that can-do attitude is one of the reasons I came up here. I mean, when I was down south, you always heard about in Alaska, people flew in anything and got in any weather, and that was an attractive thing to me at the time. And when I first showed up in Bethel, among all the operators, there were like 13 operators there, the people who were respected were the pilots who could get in. And I would say the air taxis didn't force you to fly, but they certainly encourage that type of attitude because they made money. And with you, when GPS came along, I think it actually got worse for a while because you could really get in. And I think you've touched on one key thing, which is the competition's changed quite a bit when they changed the mail system. And now you've only got 3 or 4 operators at the most per station out here in Western Alaska. And I think that's changed it. And I also think, I don't know if it's because of accidents or because air taxis haven't been around longer. But I've talked to a lot of chief pilots and owners of airlines with this website now, and I hear it consistently from everyone: we don't want our guys flying in bad weather. And I did not hear that from people at all when I first showed up, and that's been a major change.
No, undoubtedly, it's a major paradigm shift. It was quite frankly, it was an adrenaline rush. to be able to push weather and to be able to get in places where, quite frankly, you had no business being. When you got on the ground, you get the sewing machine leg. When you get out of the airplane and the dry mouth, and you've been sitting up on the edge of the seat trying to look through the windshield because it's, you know, half covered with ice. And then you get on the ground, it's just, I mean, it's a major rush. And that's, you know, that's what adrenaline junkies do. And it was fun, quite frankly. Back in the day, it was a blast. But, heck, I got to the point where, you know, that wasn't fun anymore. It was just too much work. And I had the privilege of working for a couple of operators in my time that I didn't enjoy that sense anymore. And I totally got away from it. And to the point where I kind of felt like I was losing my touch, because I felt like I was stepping back too far at times, and I would start getting questioning certain weather, and that wasn't quite frankly, wasn't bad at all. But maybe it was because I had a heightened awareness and got back, and I started thinking back at the stuff that we used to do, and just shook my head at, I don't know how I even got to the point where I am now, because I shouldn't have made it this far.
Yeah, I would agree. And as you know, I took sort of 5 years where I'd fly summers up here, but I wasn't flying full-time with the air taxi work. And before I left, I started seeing that change. And I started seeing it with myself, and I would get in somewhere when the weather was low. Instead of patting myself on the back, I was like, well, that was not very smart. And I was starting to get the feeling from the people I flew for, they didn't want us doing that. And, you know, I started thinking, why am I doing this? This is not smart. Then you start thinking about your passengers, and you start thinking, boy, they're relying on me to get them home safe. They're not relying on me to get an adrenaline kick out of knowing I can get in. So I think that has changed quite a bit up here. I think the air taxis don't expect it from you, and I my feeling is that's a good thing. And you have the resources now. Now they're, when you first had GPS, you didn't have any resources to go with the GPS. You just had a means of telling exactly where you were and what direction you were heading. And now you've got GPS approaches everywhere. And while I don't think it's appropriate to always file IFR if it's nice out, and some of the approach minimums aren't necessarily realistic, but you are starting to get the infrastructure built around the GPS and to actually give you the means of doing this job in a manner that is much more similar to lower 48 flying, or more the world norm. And that's my feeling of where Alaska's going. It's starting to become less that old school vision of Alaska, and the TV show that they filmed up here portrayed it more as the old school, and that's not the way, and even that company doesn't, you know, TV tries to make things, they hype it all up. Alaska is becoming more conventional, and it seems like that might be a good thing.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I'm sorry, Aiden, we'll cut each other out back and forth because we got the talk on delay, but you mentioned passengers. Yeah, I remember even back when I first got up here, when it was, you know, go get them and get her done and stuff, I rarely, but there was passengers that would pat you on the back for pulling it off and making it in and stuff that was probably less than desirable. Rarely. But then there was a lion's share of them that, you know, I'll tell you what, I never, ever, ever had anybody dog me for turning around. Never. In 17 years I flew in the industry, when I ended up back where I was, you know, back where it was safe, back, you know, maybe at the home base or maybe at another village or something like that, because we were going to hold out, nobody came up to me and threatened me. Nobody came up to me and said, hey, you know, the last guy got in, you know, I don't know why you couldn't get in. It's as low as below my personal minimums, you just don't, and they'd walk away. I've never had my life threatened like that. The only time I had my life threatened, I was stupid and pulled something off that was so dumb that scared the hell out of me. That's when I got my life threatened and did that at my own hand. It wasn't fun anymore.
Well, this conversation is going to wander a bit more than I was thinking. It's going to go the way my conversations have gone most of this week, it seems like, which is not bad. we look at a lot of these accidents over the last year, and I'm not, and I really am not picking on any one accident. I'm not even picking at them as a group. I don't have any facts on any of them, but it does seem like a lot of the pilots are experienced pilots, very experienced pilots. And my feeling is, my gut feeling, again, I don't have any statistics, is the new pilots coming in aren't the ones who are having accidents anymore. When I showed up, it seemed like everybody, the first year was a dangerous time for pilots up here. There's people would slide off runways and have issues. That doesn't seem to be where the problems are occurring now. And I wonder if it's maybe some of us older pilots just haven't quite gotten the word that we don't have to push it the way we used to. And yeah, I kind of just want to put that out there.
Possible that, you know, the young pilots, they come in and they're hearing that same stuff in the ground school, hearing it from the chief pilots, the training pilots, the director of operations, whoever steps in there and gives them the safety culture briefing. The young pilots are hearing it. The old pilots have been out here, they're not hearing it. They've been at it for too long. They're stuck in their ways, their egos, or their, it's just their familiarity with it just drives them into just keeping doing the same thing that they've been doing for so long and getting away with it. Eventually, you do that so many times, eventually you get caught, and that's happened quite a bit.
Right, and there is a temptation to say, well, this is what's always worked for me. And there's some validity to that as well, but there's also a thought in my head for myself, like maybe it's time for me to not think that way. Maybe I should step up and look at the ways to do it. Even though I know my old way worked.
Yeah. Obviously, you're still sitting here.
Yeah, but I mean, I started thinking about this years ago, and sure, you and I discussed it in a bar in Nome at one point. I remember an accident with Little Ace up in Cots, and it was a guy who had been out here for a gazillion years. I remember thinking, man, if that can happen to him, then it can happen to me. So, a real big change, I just hear it from all the operators now, is we don't want you guys doing that. We don't want you out there in that weather. I mean, that's just one of the big things that I've noticed, you know, coming back up here and talking to people. It's across the board. And so I don't know if I have much more to say than that.
No, I haven't got much more to add either to it. It's just, how do you get the old salts to listen? And if that's the case, you know, we could... You know, the NTSB, the FAA, they go in and they do research into this stuff, and they put in all kinds of statistics. It's like a baseball game. There's statistics for some of the craziest things, and they'll go in and they can number crunch this stuff and find out where are the accidents, who might be doing it and stuff, and then come up with answers, and what those answers might be, unfortunately, might be, you know, a year or two down the road.
Right.
That stuff does will happen.
And that, like I said at the beginning, I haven't looked at any stats yet, and I think this conversation needs to continue down the road a little bit and look at some more specifics. That was just kind of my initial reaction. I wanted to put it out there for people to hear, and it's truly not based on, everyone's going to point it at a certain accident because of the timing on this, and it's not pointed at that. It's kind of just an overall feeling over the last year. And kind of looking what's happened and looking at how the culture has changed. So I don't want anybody to think I'm pointing any fingers. I truly am not. And, you know, everybody just be careful out there and think of your passengers when you're flying.
If things are sort of objectively getting safer because of technology and because of companies not pushing pilots, you know, in the past, into the present, you know, part of the reason why everyone wants to go fly in Alaska is because they think of it as, the most dangerous job in the world, an adventurous job, all of that. Do you think that whole sort of perception, that reason for going, that that, you know, real or perceived danger is changing? Or does the very nature of flying in Alaska, because of the terrain and, you know, the types of routes and single engine aircraft and all that, you know, is it still, you know, a risky proposition, but the risk is just being managed better now?
I'm going to jump on this for a second, Brian, because people aren't, for the most part, people are not flying in the weather we used to fly in. That was the first thing I noticed when I came back to Bethel. It used to be, you know, 400 and 2.5 or a mile and a half, which is just below legal minimums. You'd have 20 or 30 207s lined up waiting to go. You go to Bethel now and it's 603 miles, which is over the legal minimums, and people are sitting and waiting, or a few people are filing IFR and leaving. So despite the better technology that helps you fly in worse weather, people aren't flying. The job's still getting done, so clearly that's not a bad thing in terms of the air taxis and people getting home and mail being flown. People have just backed off, and that's probably a good thing. If we had backed down years ago, I don't think it would have helped. I don't know what the accident rates are now. If they are less than they were 10 years ago.
Oh yeah, they're significantly less. They've dropped considerably. It's certainly a foregone conclusion that it has dropped in the 20 years. I've seen the graph, and I can't tell you exactly where it was 20 years ago to where it is now, but that line has dropped considerably. And it's technology, it's awareness, it's risk management, and it's everything. I think what we're having a discussion here is why we're having this issue all of a sudden recently. It's also a, you know, 2010 was an extremely safe year. There was hardly any fatal serious injury accidents at all until later in the year. This year seems to be completely the opposite. And, you know, that could be based on a statistical anomaly. I didn't take the statistics, so I can't explain it to you. But you know doggone well that if it gets really good at one point, somewhere it's going to jump back up, and maybe that's our time right now.
Right. But and you're right, actually. It used to be every year you'd know four people who, you know, died in a plane crash up here, you know, four or five. That was my average for like 10 years. And yeah, in recent years, I just haven't been getting the phone call saying, oh, so-and-so is missing. You know, they haven't heard from this plane in the last hour. And the runways have improved. There have been a lot of improvements. And I attribute a lot of it. I think people are not flying in as bad weather. And I think that's probably a good thing. And to address what you were saying about kind of people's vision of flying in Alaska, I don't think Alaska can be plenty exciting to fly in. And you can branch out into different types of flying in Alaska and change your adventure quota if you want. You know, you go fly floats. If you don't know how to fly floats, that's going to be super adventurous for a while. Or fly for a lodge, the off airport stuff. You know, that's adventurous because you're deciding where you're making up your own landing spot. Pilot judgment comes into play. I think a lot of pilots come if you're wanting to build time and go to the airlines. So this being a safer environment, more IFR, is a good thing for pilots who want to move on to the airlines. So I've flown a lot of places around the world. Alaska was the only place, it was the loosest place I've ever been. You'd think Africa would be loosey-goosey, and it's not. I certainly liked it, Lucy. I loved being handed a plane and say, go get the job done. But I think there is certainly a place for companies having oversight and maybe saying, no, we don't want you doing this. And I think companies are doing that more now. There are obviously still glitches in the systems, but it's definitely heading that way.
So, yeah, I fully agree.
So I don't know, that was a little bit rambly. Part of that was just wanting to get some of that off my chest, and it just seems like it's a lot of people have been around a lot of years making mistakes, because I don't think anybody should kid themselves. Most accidents are pilot error. And no matter how good the pilot was, and I've been in two accidents, as you guys all know, either one of which I was flying, and one of them was one of the best pilots I've ever met. You know, he was an awesome pilot. He's, you know, still made an error with me sitting right. You know, it happens to the best pilots out there, and you know, we owe it to our passengers to try to not let it happen. So that's my take on it. And the flip side, and when I had those two accidents, I think the company culture was different with both those companies. But nowadays, people really, one accident puts a company way behind financially. And I don't think there's not a single chief pilot or air taxi owner I've ever met who doesn't feel it when they have people die who work for them or who are flying on their aircraft. So anyone who thinks administrators or owners of air taxis don't feel it when people get hurt on their planes, doesn't know the people who run airlines. They do feel it.
What would you say to somebody who, you know, wants to fly up there and sort of dreamed of that, but is a little hesitant because they're worried that, you know, it's dangerous now, or, you know, asking you, you know, we had a guy actually who emailed us basically asking that question. You know, he felt like he had a lot of VFR day experience down in the lower 48. And was thinking about going up there and just kind of questioning, was he going to get in over his head? You know, is your answer to somebody now any different than it would have been 20 years ago?
Mine is. I don't know about Brian's, but I think now you feel a lot less pressure, overt pressure to go, or even from your fellow pilots. I think that's been reduced quite a bit. But you don't have to worry about the company, and they're definitely going to still be some companies, mainly small ones, that haven't changed their attitude. And I don't know who they are. I'm not picking on anyone there. It's bound to happen if you went someplace, and I think it'd be a smaller operator. You would still get that pressure. A lot of the pressure comes from your fellow pilots. You know, it's like, oh, I got in. It's not that bad out. And then you're like, ah, shit. Maybe I should go. So know your own limits and keep track of what the legal limits are. Honestly, that's a good start, is what the legal limits are. So anything to add to that, Brian?
You hit the nail on the head. You got to have your personal limits. And then if an individual is going to come up here and then is going to balk now maybe because feels it's unsafe, yeah, that's probably a good approach. But the other flip side to that is if he's questioning, he's got the right frame of mind, he's got the right mindset already. He should come up here and give it a shot and listen to these folks like Aiden is saying. He's got better exposure to listen to what company cultures are out there. And I've seen it too. They are conservative. And I don't think you should be afraid to come up here. If you've got that mindset, I think you got the right direction and would probably be successful.
And also, most airlines, if somebody's new up here, they're going to hold you back. Almost all airlines I know, for someone who's, you know, brand fresh, they're going to say, okay, here are the legal minimums, here are your minimums. And they're going to be much more conservative. Like I said, airlines, that's not just them not wanting you to crash. It costs them a lot of money anytime there's an accident. And so they want to minimize that chance of there being an accident with less experienced pilots. And that used to be less true as well. That may contribute to less experienced pilots not having as many problems now as well. I think there's a bigger push from air taxis to not turn people loose as quickly now. So, but I'm with you. Yeah, come up.
Yeah.
You can sit in the dark and cold with the rest of us.
We hope you liked this interview. If you found it useful, visit oddballpilot.com, oddballpilot.com, for more stuff like it.